For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with Republican political consultant Neva Hill and ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel. The teacher walkout managed to enter week two with a lot of excitement and record crowds on Monday, but the past few days have seen fewer and fewer people, although the Oklahoma Education Association has already filed a rally permit for next week. Schools are starting to call back their teachers. Ryan, is this walkout coming to an end?
You know, I think at the outset, it's important to say that whatever happens with this walkout, this is really just the beginning of a powerful movement that could reshape politics in Oklahoma for a very long time to come. So whether this walkout is over on Friday, whether it continues into next week, I think what we've seen is the beginnings of a very powerful political movement. One of the things that's become obvious over the last several days, maybe even towards the end of last week, is that legislative leadership, in particular leadership in the Oklahoma House of Representatives, has made it clear that they are not willing to budge on any new revenue-raising measures beyond those that have already passed, especially the capital gains cut. They've been totally unresponsive to this, and they've made it clear that the decisions that they made behind closed doors in their caucus meetings, that they're more bound to them than they are bound and responsive to the constituencies that have showed up at the Capitol.
Neva?
Well, I think clearly, I think the overall walkout or strike, as it's being now termed, and some of the national coverage that it's getting, has kind of reached that point where it is going to wane. And I think even if these large school districts, some of them stay out next week, it's clear more and more districts are going to go back in. And part of that's just dictated by the school calendar and the landscape of the pressure of let's get testing done, let's get on track so we can have graduation on time and move forward. Is it something that's going to be the backdrop for kind of the political conversation, what's going to happen in Oklahoma for a while? Absolutely. Along with this referendum and effort to roll back the effort to have this money actually with the Coburn Initiative, I mean, and all of that that's going to go on, it's going to be a very rugged and very vigorous summer on all fronts, I think, and certainly impact the political equation with these June primaries and the November elections.
Ryan, do you think it's better to go out on top here instead of lingering around and waiting for it to wane? That could actually be a negative for the people who are trying to boost education.
Yeah, unsolicited advice time. Yeah, I think that it matters how this thing ends.
Right.
And I would suggest that if the teachers at the Capitol, because the enthusiasm is for the teachers that are there, the ones that feel compelled to go back to their districts, teachers have compromised for years and years and years, and their anger is real. It's palpable. It's not going away, and rightly so. And same with their supporters. But if we walk out of this week, wherever the terms are this week, that creates a new normal. So, I've heard talk that there could even be a resolution, some sort of a non-binding resolution that would guarantee future revenues from next budget year going to education. Man, that's smoke and mirrors. It's not constitutionally enforceable. That's not where teachers want to end things. I think that really, if teachers want to end things in a spot where they have the most power, they say these are our demands, including a vote on the capital gains deduction that brings in over $100 million into the state's budget. We want this. And if we don't get it, we're going to do our best to file candidates against you up until Friday. And then we're going to go back to school. We're going to finish our classes out, and we'll see you on the doorsteps talking to voters now through November. And we're going to throw out the folks that stood in the way of not even eliminating the capital gains tax exemption or revenue options, but even allowing it to come up to a vote. At least let it come up for a vote.
And I think what we're going to see is a lot of other information infused into this conversation, some which came out this week. The fact that $115,000 a day is the price tag that's been estimated from a public safety standpoint, for the highway, the additional troopers, the all of the other services inside the building and outside, as we have gone through this process of having the teachers out there now for more than 9 days, 10 days. So I think, but in terms of what Ryan, what you're saying in the scheme of what teachers and everyone are going to infuse into the political dialogue, it's going to be a pretty energized debate on both sides. And I think, you know, you're going to have a lot of folks who are going to say, look, you know, we don't agree with any of this. We don't agree with what, you know, we don't agree with this and what might have been something we supported at the beginning, the way that it has transpired, we're now not for, and we're going to roll all of that back. So it's going to be a very aggressive campaign, I think.
And speaking of that campaign, it got off to it kicked off actually Wednesday. Filing for the 2018 elections is taking place right now. We had a record-breaking 458 first day of filing. The election board is on pace for 650 candidates filing before this dust clears. Certainly there are open seats, not just for governor, but several statewide offices that are currently term limited. But Neva, are you surprised by this turnout?
Not really. I think it was expected, and it was the highest single first day of filing since 2000. So, I mean, we have a very highly charged political landscape, and I think we have a lot of folks coming out. What this says when we start to really break it down and look at the next session is that with the numbers and the projections, I mean, you can look in the House and say that basically the possibility next February of three-fourths of the members, you know, having less than 4 years experience by the time we look at the, you know, the freshman class now, the ones that are terming out, the ones that are just leaving, and then that there have been some surprises already in terms of folks that have just said, you know, for a variety of reasons, we are choosing not to run again. That's going to make for, you know, a very difficult landscape as these folks come back in. And if they think it's going to be any easier next year than the environment these lawmakers have been in right now, I think that would be an incorrect assessment.
Ryan,
I mean, overall environment for this filing period is super exciting. Heck, I want to go file for something. I don't know what, but it's, you see everybody up there, and it's really exciting. I remember those days.
They have to run a campaign. Part they have to remember.
But for these 3 days, they can largely, you know, forget about it. There's this excitement. You know, I visited with my good friend Kendra Horn last night, and we're taping on Thursday. I visited with her on Wednesday evening, and she had gone and filed that day for 5th District Congress, and she said, you know, we've been out raising money, we've been doing this campaign, and now all of a sudden, here it is. And it's a really exciting day to get out there and put your name on the line and say, I'm going to stand up for these values and go ask the people for their vote. It's a humbling experience. So I'm often Debbie Downer on the show. I'm going to talk about some area in the filings where we don't see that kind of enthusiasm, and that's in these district attorney races. 27 DAs, every single one of them are up this election cycle in 2018. This is the most important position in the criminal justice system. These men and women are the folks that if you want to put blame on anybody's shoulder for the criminal justice system as it stands right now, it's them. If you want to see somebody that can reform the system without any changes at the legislature, it's them. Of these 27, as we're taping Thursday morning, 22 have filed with no challenger. Mm-hmm. There's been one that's been doesn't even have candidates filed for it yet. This is the most powerful seat in the criminal justice system. You know, how are we gonna hold these people accountable? How are we gonna have a conversation about criminal justice reform if we don't have competitive races here? And of those that are uncontested, as of our taping right now, two of them, you know, one right here in Oklahoma County, and in Cleveland County, you know, two of the most populous counties in the state of Oklahoma, you're having folks getting possibly reelected without any sort of a conversation about where the criminal justice system should go in those counties.
Meanwhile, Neva, there several Republicans have decided to resign. They're not going to come back. And on Wednesday, we got two more. John Paul Jordan said he's not going to come back. Josh Cockcroft says he's not going to come back. Is this a concern for the Republican
You
Party?
Always have this. I mean, and in the instance of Jordan, I mean, he's moving over and running right. for a judge position.
He's changing branches.
Josh Cockcroft, while he's been in leadership and mm-hmm. certainly someone that, you know, would have years ahead of him, young family, a lot of other interests. And so we always see this. I mean, they always kind of pop to the front in terms of attention, you know, during filing week. But when the dust settles, I think we're going to have, you know, a fairly normal look at the the cross section of folks that are really running. I think we'll have some teachers. I think we'll have some, we'll have some mix of all of the folks that we usually see running for the legislature. And, you know, we also have that element that, you know, as Ryan speaks of, the fact that you do have seats where people are very, there's less competition. I mean, we're going to have primaries where there may be 7 or 8 or 9 in a primary. Sure. We're going to have folks that get in with a pass and don't have any competition, and that's the ongoing process, the give and take of filing.
And what is it on the other side for the Democrats? What does it mean for, it's easy to run against somebody who's got a record of some kind. You can go, well, he voted this way, she voted that way. But if someone new comes in, it's not quite as easy for the Democrats to go, well, you're running on a record of some kind.
Well, then I think that, you know, you do what the Republicans have done to Democrats for a generation now, is to hold their party against them. You know, if they're, you know, you hear that, oh, well, if this person goes to Congress, they're just going to be a vote for Nancy Pelosi, which is usually ridiculous. But I mean, I think that that's just it. Any House member, any new House member that's on the ballot right now on the Republican side has to answer their constituency. Are you going to vote for Speaker Charles McCall to be the Speaker of the House again? And if so, why, and where are you going to be out on capital gains? Are you going to let this stuff come up for a vote? You know, to me, there's just the raw political moment right now in the context of the walkout, where Republicans, if they wanted to, could take education away from Democrats for good. If Governor Fallon wouldn't make her comment about teachers being like teenagers wanting a new car, but instead would embrace this, come out and lead on this, she could be the Henry Bellman of our time. And they could, you know, we'd see Republicans out running on the issue of education instead of running away from it. So I think that a lot of these Democrats that are going to be on the ballot, if you're a Republican, just because you haven't been in the House, don't expect that you're not going to have to answer the question of where are you going to be out on leadership and where are you going to be out on these procedural votes that allow revenues to come to the table.
I think you're going to have to answer the questions as you always do, at the door, in the forums. I mean, the things that people want to know where you are on. But in terms of inside baseball at the Capitol of, you know, are you going to be for this speaker or where are you in a leadership fight or something like that, they don't even understand what you're talking about. They want to know what you're going to do with respect to representing them. I mean, it's the retail politics, and they can complicate it with trying to have their 5-point plan of how they're going to solve all of the problems at the Capitol. If they get there, no one's going to believe it, number one, and number two, they're not going to be successful even if they try in their first year as a freshman lawmaker. So I think we go back to the basics in the campaign. It's great for all of this, you know, all of this fodder as we lead into, you know, finished filing week, but the bottom line is they've got to get out there, meet the folks, and the folks have to like them and believe that they're going to be someone that can really represent them if they go to the Capitol.
And speaking of the promises that politicians make, this week I attended the Oklahoma Creativity Gala, where they awarded the designation of Creativity Ambassador to new ambassadors in the state of Oklahoma. One of them, my former boss and mentor, Senator Kelly Haney, he gets up to the microphone and he says, you know, it's always dangerous to ask a politician to ask a speech. He said, but my speech is going to be short because I don't have any promises to make. And so and I thought that that was apropos coming up on filing period.
State Attorney General Mike Hunter, who is also seeking re-election this November, releases a 5-year-old report on an awarded contract for cleanup at Tar Creek Superfund site. Hunter says he and his predecessor, now EPA head Scott Pruitt, didn't release the audit because it didn't warrant prosecution. But Ryan, this looks like the company awarded the job was paid for far more than originally estimated.
Well, when you say far more, the difference between around $600,000 and $3 million. Yeah. It seems like a lack of transparency is contagious in the Attorney General's office. You know, Scott Pruitt has had that problem where, and he's taken it with him to Washington, where he has been one of the least transparent figures in modern political history in the federal government. And now Mike Hunter, on the eve of filing, puts this out. I think maybe speculation is that he's trying to put out this issue, but then he immediately is rewarded with a new lawsuit saying, okay, well, we want more documents. We want to know about your communications and the communications of your predecessor, Scott Pruitt, with Senator Jim Inhofe's office and the EPA around this very issue. And this is a matter of public concern, and we're talking about a huge contract dealing with a Superfund site in the state of Oklahoma, one of the largest environmental disasters in our nation. And the people of Oklahoma deserve to know. The people of the United States deserve to know. How is our money being spent there? Are the contracts being let out to the appropriate people? And if you do find things that are troubling or concerning, just shielding them from public's eye until you, in your discretion, turn it over, that's wrong. And frankly, our Open Records Act, and then, you know, to the extent that the Freedom of Information Act is going to be used for some of these federal documents, it should not, the standard should not be months and months and months of litigation and sometimes years of litigation, and then we turn things over reluctantly. That seems to be the standard that we've seen, not only in the Attorney General's office, but in other agencies in the state as well.
Neva, we hear often about waste in government, and I mean, this looks like a big, huge hole of government, a lot of money that could have been
This has certainly been a focus, and I think this is something that started with the previous Attorney General's time in office, and now what we see is basically the Attorney General Hunter saying, look, we have reviewed this. The court has said, release this information. And basically these audits, I mean, they have his finding is that there is nothing that warrants prosecution. And from that standpoint, he's done from his office standpoint what he believes needs to be done. Now, outside watchdog groups and others that want to continue to, engage in this, ask for other documentation, that's going to be part of the ongoing process. And we see this in agencies. Certainly agencies like EPA have been at the forefront of this, just given the fact that there tend to be very hard, strident groups on both sides that have a point of view that seems to be never-ending, and litigation seems to be never-ending, unfortunately.
President Donald Trump wants one of Oklahoma's Supreme Court judges to move to the federal court. Justice Patrick Weirich, who only came to the bench just 14 months ago, has been picked by the Trump administration for a federal judgeship in Oklahoma City. Neva, Weirich has been a shooting star in the conservative movement. Are you surprised by this?
Not really surprised. I mean, he is a rising star, and he's someone that even in November, the White House announced that he was on a list of 25 potential Supreme Court choices. I mean, he's someone that has the resume, has the legal pedigree, so to speak, that they're looking for, a strong conservative credentials. And so he'll go through a confirmation process that'll be very strenuous in the United States Senate. He'll have a lot of things that will come up, that he will have to speak to. But I think the bottom line is it's a strong appointment, and we'll wait and see. Clearly, both United States senators from Oklahoma have expressed strong support up front, and we'll as we know, this is a process that will take some time, but certainly I think is a good, strong appointment to move forward.
Ryan.
It's quite possible that when Trump was signing the nomination, that he was sitting in the White House with Fox News feeds announcing that the raids on Trump's lawyer's office by the FBI and the Justice Department. So, I got to wonder if Justice Weirich was at all conflicted in being picked to uphold the law by a man who has the utmost contempt for the rule of law. And of course, Justice Weirich himself is no stranger to controversy in the appointment process. His appointment to the state Supreme Court was challenged by two Oklahomans represented by the ACLU, who believed that he did not meet the residency requirements for the post. And even though the evidence strongly suggested that there was an issue, including statements that he made in his own application, voter registration, voting history, that challenge was dismissed on a jurisdictional issue, and the underlying factual and evidentiary issues were never addressed. So, the idea of him moving through the confirmation process, I think that, as Neva says, he's going to have not an easy road in the United States Senate. I think combined with some of the misrepresentations that were made under his watch to the United States Supreme Court and a death penalty case, several years ago, for which he was called out in court in oral argument by Justice Sotomayor, combined with the application that he made and his ultimate appointment to the state Supreme Court, there are going to be some questions that I think will mar that process at least for a bit.
Oklahoma City gets its first new mayor in 14 years. Former State Senator David Holt took his oath of office on Tuesday, saying he wants to double down on unity and getting rid of differences to find common purposes. Ryan, Holt is a Republican, but do you hold him to his word of wanting to see an end to divisiveness?
Yeah, I think that I believe that he wants to do that. I think that he's not so naive as to believe that he's going to actually end that. It's a worthwhile goal, but I don't think that it's one that he'll be able to entirely meet. And I think that he knows that. I have had a good working relationship with David Holt whenever he was in the state Senate. We don't always agree on everything, but I found him to be somebody who is an honest broker and is very transactional in nature. He's not been an ideologue of any sort that I think that's important in a position like mayor. I think that he has been, from his time as chief of staff and then even his time in the legislature, he's had his eye on this. And I think that he's been preparing for this day for a very long time in his life. I don't think that there's probably been anyone that's assumed the mayor's office in Oklahoma that has spent more of their life preparing to be mayor of Oklahoma City than David Holt. But now this is where the rubber meets the road. He's presided over his first council meeting. They're looking at the next MAPS agenda. They're hopefully, finalizing the streetcar mess that is, complicating my commute to downtown every day.
That's what happens with progress. It doesn't just magically appear overnight.
just looking out here trying to get this Broad Boulevard thing done.
I wish him the very best. I think that, he was elected without much of a campaign, and so that's a blessing and a curse as a politician. Is your mandate really a mandate? Well, we'll find out in 4 years. But I think that he's definitely got the tools, and I think a strong, diverse coalition behind him to get some really cool things done for Oklahoma City.
Neva,
I think you're right. I mean, he basically had a mandate, almost approaching 80%, even though it was not a competitive campaign.
But he was out there.
By any count, he still ran a race, even though he didn't have strong competition. Right. I guess is the better way to say that. But you're right. I think it's a generational change. I think he has cast a vision not only in his one OKC theme that he used in his campaign, but even in his first moments in office. I mean, you can see it in his own mayor's office. I mean, where in the conference room, they replaced the photographs of former mayors, and they've put a broad representation of 20 children and their faces. And one of the things he said is that we need to think about what we're doing, that it's not only about his two children, but it's about the future and the children of Oklahoma City. So I think he's casting a very broad vision with a very broad coalition, and I think Ryan's right. I mean, now comes the time where you work with a council and you work with all of these outside interests and points of view, and you try to forge something that continues to move the city forward in a very positive direction. But he certainly has the resume and certainly has the background to jump in and do it very well at the outset.
And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.